A lot of fun, isn't it, to get out in the garden and dig around in the dirt. And at this time of the year, you know what? There's a lot to be done, especially with that slow start that we've gotten this year with that cool, wet weather. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Friday means garden talk, and very pleased to have Melinda Myers with us today by phone. Melinda is a Milwaukee-based garden expert and the author of more than 20 books. Been a regular on this show for a long, long time. She's also the host of Melinda's Garden Moments, and we are very lucky to have her with us today. Melinda, thanks again for spending time with us.
Always a pleasure, Larry, and always great to chat gardening. Even if the weather is not so conducive, the cool weather is great weeding weather, and I think most gardeners, at least I know, have a few weeds to pull right now.
Oh, man. Well, that's okay. Something we just haven't done any yet. I mean,
Right.
It's unbelievably weedy, let's put it that way,
in
the flower beds.
It is. At least a lot of them are green. So if you get them before they go to seed, you're good. And they blend in, hopefully, with your other plants until you can get them out of the garden.
What kinds of problems are you seeing with these extreme conditions that we've had in our gardens from 1 year to the next?
You know, one of the things I'm seeing is just the fluctuation and the change. And so we think, you know, after last year's heat and drought, you know, we're all talking about heat and drought-tolerant plants, and then we switch into cool weather and wet weather. And so seeing our plants adapt and trying to provide the care they need given the changes in weather. This spring in particular, you know, the cooler temperatures, I was talking to some gardeners last night at an event, and somebody said, oh, I just haven't gotten things in the ground. And I'm like, it's okay. It's been so cool that a lot of things are just sitting there. And one of the things I'm telling gardeners and I'm doing myself is using some of the floating row covers, the season-extending fabrics, to just keep things a little warm and toasty on those cooler nights. Because I've seen a few tomatoes with some damage on the leaf tissue, basil. When we get into those really cooler temperatures we had just a few weeks ago, it won't kill the plant. It just causes a little bit of spotting damage to the leaves. And so it slows things down. So the cooler temperatures are getting everything off to a little bit slower start as well. The other problem with the heat and the drought of last year, if you weren't able to water, or even if you were, you know, the plants just couldn't absorb the water. We saw a lot of root damage and dieback from the stress. So then we throw wet, soggy soil on top of a compromised root system. So that's adding to the stress as well. So it's just always trying to keep your plants as healthy as possible given all those challenges, and always looking for plants that tolerate our norm, whatever that is, and then that way we can help them through the extreme on either end.
We have callers. Not yet. We don't have callers yet. Well, let's get some callers. Here's the number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call with your questions and comments. We'll get you on real quick. We have a Facebook question from Chris, and I wanted to pass that along.
Okay.
Has a honeysuckle vine question. When can they be pruned and how drastic? I think on a past show you said right to the ground.
Well, with honeysuckle vine, we'd like to do that late winter. They bloom on new growth, so the benefit of doing it in late winter, you have all that tangled mass that adds some winter interest, some space for habitat for birds perhaps. Late winter, and you can cut them back usually to about 2 feet above the ground for the honeysuckle vine when they're really overgrown. The other thing you can do is remove a few stems back to the ground if you have, you know, multiple shoots coming out, but usually about 2 feet, usually late winter. It won't hurt the plant to do it now, but they put a lot of energy into growth right now, so you've really wasted some of that. So if it's not too out of control, do minor pruning to get it to fit that space. Do your major pruning in late winter, and you'll have much better results.
Very good. And, you know, I said we didn't have any phone calls, and when I gave the number, instantly our lines were all filled.
Good. Well, that's good. We have gardeners out there ready for answers.
All right. David in Dodgeville. Hi.
Hello, how's it going?
Great, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I believe I have nematodes, and I was wondering if how to tell for sure and how to control them, if that is the problem.
You know, typically we do have some nematodes in the state, but fortunately the good part about being in the north, we don't have the severe problem that we typically see in more southerly states. I think there's still a nematologist on the UW staff. It's been a long time since I've chatted with her, and she always joked that she felt bad coming to Wisconsin because we didn't think we had nematodes. And she pointed out we did. What makes you think that you have nematodes, David?
Just seeing the slow growth on my beans and little bite marks on radishes and a few root crops.
Okay, nematodes are microscopic, so they're very tiny. Everybody argues nobody wants them. The pathologists don't want to count them as a disease, and the entomologists don't want to count them as an insect. A couple things that may be happening. Beans and corn are very sensitive to cool temperatures. So when we plant them, typically in mid-May, the soils are cool, but not as cool as they were this mid-May. That slows down germination, and we often see problems with root corn maggot. And what will happen is you'll see poor germination of your beans. You'll see distorted seedlings, some bizarre growth. Radishes are also subject to root maggot, where you'll see little brown lines going through. One of the things I like to do for my radishes is I interplant them between my cabbages, cover it with floating row cover. That keeps the cabbage worms from laying their eggs. I don't have the cabbage worms on my cabbage, but it also keeps the adult fly-like insect to prevent the root maggot on the radishes, and I have really a nice crop. I'm guessing you have some root maggot problems. What you may want to do is contact the UW, the entomology lab. There is a website, Phil Pelletieri, excellent resource. I'm sure mm-hmm. you've heard him on this show. Before I would suspect nematodes, and I think that might be it. The good news about beans, if it's the cool weather, replanting is usually the solution for the corn root maggot.
Mm-hmm. And Phil is actually going to be on the program next week, Wednesday.
Oh, excellent.
So pretty good timing. Thanks, David, for calling. Appreciate your call. Pat in Rudolph. Hello. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you. I have another question now. My first question is, I saw a Chicago piece at my local garden center at Jung's in Stevens Point, and I would love to buy it, but what could I do to keep it over the winter? I am definitely zone 4.
Right. With the peace rose, what they do in Minnesota is they use what's called the Minnesota tip method, and they're a zone 4 as well. And what they do in the winter, this is way more work than I would do, but this is one option, is about a foot away from the rose, they take a spade to cut through the roots, they tip it and bury the rose. I was there when mm-hmm. they did this at the Arboretum at the end of October, and I'm like, wow, way too much work. What you may want to do, here's a couple of options. I see pretty good success with the soil mound method, where in the fall, after we've had a week of freezing temperatures, that's key, making sure the plant's dormant, loosely tie up the canes, bury the bottom 8 to 10 inches with compost or soil. So you're going to need to keep some topsoil or compost someplace where it won't freeze. Cover the bottom 8 to 10 inches. Once that freezes, you can cover the top with evergreen boughs, straw, or marsh hay for insulation. In the spring, as the temperatures hover around freezing, pull off the mulch and the marsh hay, the evergreen boughs. And then some people let the rain wash the soil mound away, or as it thaws out, they start raking that gently away. That's an old method that works pretty well. Rose cones, I just find people tend to put on too soon, take off too late. They actually end up cooking the plants and blowing in the neighbor's yard. And I've just not been a fan because I see it not being the most successful. Leaves work great. The problem I find is individual plants, it's not a good enough insulation. But if you had a rose bed that needed protection, then what you can do is cut your roses back. Typically, we prune in the spring, but in this case, you'd cut your roses back to about 18 inches, surround the area with hardware cloth, sink it in the ground so the animals can't get in. Once the ground freezes, then you just pack dry leaves in at 3 foot high, pack them down good and tight. Some people put plastic, but if they're packed tight, the leaves will stay dry, and that's good insulation. I know some gardeners do that individually. I just haven't seen as good a results just because of the lack of volume. So those would be a couple of options for you. Or if you grow it in a pot, put it in an unheated garage, just, you know, maybe in a box with some packing peanuts or other insulation material away from the door, on top of a board if it's a cement floor that you're putting it on, and that will just help give it some insulation, but the cool it needs.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Okay. I have another comment.
Okay.
I was surprised to find that lettuce and carrots have overwintered, and we are eating them now. I was surprised about the lettuce.
Yeah, and that's excellent. And sometimes it will reseed. The goldfinches love the seeds of lettuce.
That's why I planted that.
Excellent, excellent. And then parsley will often overwinter, but it doesn't usually taste as good. And I'm glad you brought up carrots. I love to leave carrots in the garden. Once the ground gets a little crunchy, I throw some mulch on, and if we have a winter thaw, and this year was perfect for it because it stayed consistently cool, boy, they have the best flavor, don't they?
Oh, they're great. Yes.
Excellent. Well, thank you for sharing that, Pat. That's always fun to hear what gardeners in Wisconsin can make happen. That's great.
Thanks, Pat, for calling. Appreciate it. And you can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Kim and Mequon, you are next. Hi, Kim.
Oh, hi. How are you? Hey, I just had a question. What is the best kind of boxwood for planting in a pot instead of having the shrubbery, just making it in a pot?
Yeah, and one of the things with boxwood, any of the, like the winter gen green velvet, most of the ones that the garden centers around here are selling are the most hardy of the boxwoods. So if you're going to like an independent garden center, the key is going to be when we do plants in a pot over winter is keeping the roots insulated. So we typically like to use a plant that's at least one, preferably two zones hardier. So even though those are good boxwoods for in-ground, you're going to want to make sure they're not exposed to winter wind, typically coming from the northwest, so that varies with, you know, urban areas, and winter sun, because the roots tend to be frozen, and extremely cold temperatures. So you're going to want it in a larger container that's weatherproof, so it won't break, you know, as the soil freezes and expands, and then in a somewhat sheltered location if you're going to leave it out, you know, kind of for winter decor. I've had good luck overwintering a lot of zone 5 plants in pots, but it's ugly, but it's effective. I shove them against my garage, take my annual containers, and I set those around for insulation. If I have any extra leaves, I'll bag them and set those around, and when I shovel the snow, I throw it on top. And that's worked very well for the last 15 years, keeping some camassiparis, a clematis in a pot, a weeping lilac. My Japanese maple, I think, is 5 years old now, and I've overwintered it every year that way. So, but it's not pretty, so it's nothing that I'd take anyone back to see, but in the spring, it looks great when I put them out. So you just want to be careful if you want to use them for winter decoration.
There you go. Thanks, Kim.
Good luck. Is there okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
Oh, did you have
Yeah, you could have followed up, Kim. We lost her. Okay, sorry, Kim.
Sorry, Kim.
Tad in Ontario, Wisconsin. Hi.
Good morning. I was given a couple hundred tulip bulbs by my father-in-law from St. Louis, and I'm wondering what to do with them. Should I plant them now? Should I store them through the summer and plant them in the fall like I normally do? What should I do?
Did he have them growing in the garden, dug them up, didn't want them, and he just gave it? I mean, he didn't give them to you in the fall, right? He just gave them to you now. They bloomed out, and he didn't want them. Is that what happened?
Right. He's reducing his beautiful gardens as he ages. It's just too much for him to take care of, so we're the recipient of tulip balls.
All right.
Okay. Well, a couple things you can do. Botanic gardens, and I know some avid gardeners, including the executive director at the Friends for Burner Botanical Gardens, was telling me she has great luck. She just stores hers in a cool, dark corner in the basement. She used to work at the Missouri Botanic Garden and had good success. I, on the other hand, am the person that always forgets about them until January.
Yeah.
So I like to plant mine right away. They're in the soil, and then I don't have to remember. So your options would be keeping them in a cool, dark place, a spare refrigerator, you know, maybe packing them in peat moss away from apples and things, in a cool, dark corner in the basement as far away, you know, as cool as you can find. If you have, like, a root cellar kind of conditions, that would also work. Otherwise, pop them in the garden where you want them, then they're in place and ready to go for next year.
There you go. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Our guest today, Melinda Myers, Milwaukee-based garden expert, the author of more than 20 books. She's also the host of Melinda's Garden Moments here on Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here with Judith Sears Poisson on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking gardening today with Melinda Myers. Great to have her with us. She comes by pretty regularly. We love to have her on. She's knows so much, more than 20 books written. She's got Melinda's Garden Moments. And by the way, Melinda, how's Melinda's Garden Moments doing?
They're doing great. We're on between TV and radio, we're on over 135 stations this year.
Wow.
Across the country and a few in Canada. So it's been very exciting. And so as I get to travel, there's some people, you know, I have some people that we already have a connection, which is fun. And that's one of the things I love about what I get to do. And I think that maybe what is one of the things you love about your job is we get to meet so many nice people that share and share what they know so we can pass it along.
Yeah, it's great. It's great experiences, isn't it? Lots
of fun. And if you don't, if we're not on in your area, I think we're on throughout almost all of Wisconsin. They are archived on my website, melindamyers.com. So if you missed it or you want to review it, you can just go to my website. Melinda's Garden Moments, and the audio and the video tips are archived. So I do 3 tips a week on radio, so new tips, and then the old ones where I think at about 500 tips right now. And, yeah, so if anybody's got an idea that they'd like me to talk about, please email me because I'm always looking for new topics. There's plenty to talk about, but some days, you know, it's like, okay, I need
some
ideas.
What are we going to do next? Yeah, understood.
Yes, exactly.
Well, we have lots of questions here. People online and on the phone. Heather and Madison with us by phone. Hi, Heather.
Hi. I had terrible ants in my raised beds, and I put some Diamantris earth on it, and that seemed to take care of it for a while, but now they're back, and I'm not sure what to do to get rid of them.
Oh, I'll tell you, the ants have been awful this year. And as wet as it was, I was really surprised to see that. And this is when I wish Phil was sitting in there with you, Larry, or next to me. There are some products out there that are relatively safe. If they're not hurting anything, you know, if they're not disturbing the roots of your plants, you could just leave them be. You want to make sure you don't step in them as they crawl up your legs. That's disgusting and sometimes irritating. you know, they're really the harm they cause is by disrupting the soil, exposing the roots, and drying the roots. There are some products available. The permethrins, most are labeled for use in vegetable or food crops, so you're going to want to check before treating. There are some products that contain borax. Most of those are inside ant traps as well. That would be my best recommendation for you. Larry, I know you pick up a lot of good advice from Phil when you're on with him, and I don't know if anything comes to mind that we could pass along to Heather.
Nothing right off the top of my head. I think you've made some good points there, and he will be on next week Wednesday, so it might be worth, you know, just tuning in then too, Heather.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks, Heather. Give those a try. And then, yes, Phil always has some great insights, so I always learn a lot from him.
Garrett and McQuanigo up next. Hi, Garrett.
Hi there. How's it going today?
Great. Thanks for calling.
Hey, I was just wondering, I just bought a new house and was considering putting some blueberry bushes as well as some raspberry bushes in, and I was wondering if it was too late in the season to do that.
Not at all. Not at all. With blueberries, you're going to want to really highly amend the soil. They like moist, well-drained soil. So I know in McQuanigo, there's a lot of rock and stone and gritty soil. So you're going to want to add organic matter. Those folks that are doing heavier clay will want to add organic matter to improve the drainage. A lot of gardeners in Wisconsin will end up using containers because you can create that ideal soil mix that they like. They also like the soil a little acidic, so that's, again, adding that organic matter and maybe using acidifying fertilizers or organic fertilizers. Milorganite works great in terms of that. It has some chelated iron. Raspberries, tough. They'll grow anywhere, so they'll do fine. So look for disease-free plants. There's some new blueberries, jelly bean out of Brazil. The Brazzleberry series, they have compact raspberries for those looking for container raspberry plants. They also have some compact blueberries. So for those that are maybe balcony gardening that aren't as lucky as having garden space like you, Garrett, can do them in pots as well. So not too late. Actually, it's a great time if you can find them. Blueberries, you can get fruit on one plant. Mm-hmm. If you have more than one, you'll have better productivity.
There you go.
Okay, great.
Thanks, Garrett,
for
calling.
Good luck with that. It'll be a lot of fun.
Bill in Rhinelander, what's on your mind?
Hi, I'm having trouble with some weeds in my garden.
Okay.
All right.
My garden is pretty well weed free, but then I got some Mick manure one year.
Oh.
And these weeds came with it, and they're real small. They come up, they have two leaves on them, and they the root is like a hair, and they keep growing. Then they have four leaves. Then they kind of branch out and keep growing.
They get a little white flower, very tiny, tiny white flower on them.
Yeah, they do eventually.
Yeah, it sounds like chickweed. And chickweed, I had the same problem. I came in with some compost that I put in that wasn't obviously cooked hot enough. And, boy, it's hard. You weed them out, and they come right back. They flower and set seed before we even notice them sometimes. And so in a garden, really, you can spot treat with Roundup. But, you know, it's just as easy to weed them out. I usually just take an action hoe or a cultivator and just kind of lightly slice and pull them out and make sure to get rid of them that way. Mulching will help to some extent. So once you get them out, that'll help suppress any weed seeds that are in the ground from coming back. The key is getting it when it comes up so that it doesn't have a chance to flower and set seed for the next crop. Again, you know, a light treatment with Roundup, the benefit there is you're killing the whole plant. And sometimes even though it pulls easy, it's hard to get them all. But you want to protect your good plants when you're applying a total vegetation killer like Roundup that contains glyphosate. So it sounds like chickweed, difficult to control even with broadleaf weed killers, and so it's just keeping after it, I'm afraid to tell you, and mulching.
Okay, yeah, they came a few years ago, and I couldn't get them out. They kept growing, and last year I took and I didn't plant anything in this garden. I used Roundup all summer.
And then try the mulching, because the Roundup doesn't take care of anything in the ground, so any of the seeds, that won't kill those. And so, and they seed readily. I'll tell you, they are tough plants. I have a patch in my bed under my street tree, and I keep after it like you, and it's, boy, and after last year, I could hear Larry mention that, you're right. Last year's heat and drought, chickweed does great.
There you go, Bill. Good luck. Thank you a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And Matt in Pewaukee, turn to you next. Hi, Matt.
Hi there. I have got a question about pruning bushes. I bought a house about a year ago, and now it is my first time to try to clean up the landscaping. And we have some exceedingly overgrown burning bushes, as well as evergreens, and finally some lilacs. And I'm looking online, and it says that you can actually cut a number of the burning bushes and potentially the lilacs back to, you know, close to the roots. Do I have to, how late do I have to wait? Can I do this? They're so overgrown that it's kind of a bit of an eyesore, and I'm just trying to figure out what the best way to do it as far as timing goes.
Okay, great question, because I'm sure a lot of people have that same question. The lilacs, at least on this part of the state in southeast Wisconsin, are just finishing up the later blooming lilacs. And so with spring flowering plants, we want to prune them after flowering. And I say right after because I know gardeners, and you go, I'll do it next week. So they're going to be setting their flower buds about midsummer. And so we want to prune before that if we want flowers next year. Now, what I like to do with lilacs is to take a few of the older stems right back to the ground level, reduce the height by a third. Now, it can look a little top-heavy that first year, but if you take the whole thing back to the ground, often what happens is all that stored energy in the roots pushes new growth, and then you end up with a lilac that's even bigger that you have to manage the height. So then next year you take about a third more of the big fat stems, and then the third year, by then, you've got it down to size, growth from top to bottom, it's looking good. So it's a couple-year process that you can kind of hide if you need to with some larger annuals or perennials until you get the shrub down to size. But it, depending on how overgrown, it may not look that bad. With burning bush, it doesn't really like that severe pruning. I've seen it die back to about a foot above the ground, and we had a cold winter. I think it was 94, 95 maybe, when we had a really cold snap, and I thought they were done. They did come back, but that's not the best way to manage them. With burning bush, because they're usually a single trunk with branching near the ground, is to take longer branches back to a shorter branch so that you reduce the height, but you do it in a way that it holds the natural form, and you remove about a third to a fourth at the most of the growth so you don't stimulate more growth, then you end up with a bigger plant. Late winter is an excellent time to do that. You can still do that now, not a problem. Evergreens, on the other hand, depending on the type of evergreen, major pruning for junipers, arborvitae, and yews late winter before growth begins, mid-July when the plants have sent out new growth and are somewhat dormant is another time. I don't like fall pruning because that growth that's been exposed all summer long, if we go and prune it in the fall, now we expose all that tender growth that was sheltered to the winter winds and the winter sun, and I find we end up having a lot of drying and browning and then more pruning to do late winter. Pines send out what are called candles. The buds expand. It looks like little candles on the tips. We can cut two-thirds of those off to slow the growth down. Spruces, you can prune back above a healthy bud. If you prune deeper in the plant where there's no new growth, then you're going to end up killing that branch, and they tend not to rejuvenate because they grow from the tip or those buds. So with evergreens, it depends a little bit on what the evergreen is, but those are some things. Libraries have my book, Month by Month Gardening in Wisconsin, but I do have a section on pruning small trees, shrubs, raspberries, and those kind of things in the book. So that might be another place to check out. So it's Month by Month Gardening in Wisconsin. And for my Minnesota friends, I also did Month by Month Gardening in Minnesota. And I do talk about under the, you know, when to prune what, vines, shrubs, trees, and those kind of things in there, as well as giving you some tips and some graphics on how to do it.
There you go. Thanks, Matt, for calling. Appreciate it. We have on my Facebook page, Paula posted a photo and says we have a flowering peach that had rabbit damage. It was girdled completely around the trunk. Oh, man. It has leaves, some leaves, but it looks to be struggling mightily. Can we save the tree?
Well, here's the thing, and I'm glad you mentioned, Paula, because, boy, the rabbits and voles were awful this winter.
Yeah.
I've talked to more people who have lost three-year-old fothergillas, which is a relative of witch hazel, fruit trees like you. What happens, as you know, Paula, is when they eat the cambium, the bark, if they take the living tissue that carries water nutrients between the roots and the leaves, then the plant can't pull up what it needs and eventually dies. Now, sometimes it looks like they've eaten through, but they really haven't. There's enough tissue, the plant can survive and kind of callus over. If your plant's pretty sparse, it might be time to plant a new one. Peaches tend to be short-lived in our area anyway. However, nothing beats the flavor from a fresh-from-the-tree peach, so it's, I think, worth the effort if you have the space. I would wait and see what happens. Some avid gardeners will try bridge grafting, and that's taking a piece of a branch, and then you graft it above and below the damage. But you have to line up the vascular system so
yeah.
that... Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I say, Larry.
Boy.
Yeah, this is just for those, okay, I'm going to try anything, and if it doesn't work, I'm okay. So I think your better solution is nurse this along, see if it recovers, and have another one in the ground so you're ready when this one, if it does die this year, you've got one started for the future, and if it survives, you're ready for the next generation of peaches. And then the other thing I would say is cylinder of hardware cloth, sink it several inches in the ground, not tight to the trunk, but you're just making a fence, you know, about 4 feet high to help keep the voles and the rabbits away over winter. You can leave that up year-round if you don't mind the way it looks. Just make sure it doesn't hit the trunk or get dislodged. But that's a great way to protect your plants when we have a bad winter like last year where the voles and rabbits were just doing tons of damage.
There we go. And, you know, we did, not too long ago, Melinda, a show on straw bale gardening.
Yes.
And I got a comment from a Facebook comment from Willie who said, I'm trying straw bale gardening. Transplants went in a couple weeks ago. Everything's growing. Tomatoes, peppers, leeks, cabbage, carrots from seed and so forth. I used just 8 bales this year. I'm going to use 25 next year. Couldn't be happier.
Wow.
Wow is right.
That's That's excellent to hear. I'm a little late getting started because I moved me and my garden, and I'm going to try some straw bales. I have the bales because after I heard your show, Larry, I went out and said, I'm buying my straw bales because I know all the listeners will be doing that soon. So I'm glad to hear because I wanted to give it a try myself so that I could speak a little more eloquently about it. So that's great to hear. I know there's a ton of interest in it, so that's exciting.
I got one bale. My neighbor picked up some straw bales, and he said, I've got one. Judith has five, I think, straw bales. So we're all experimenting.
That'll be great with Judith, her containers, her straw bales.
Sure.
That's excellent. Well, I'll have to compare notes and have a harvest party together.
That sounds like a plan. All right. Let's go to Norman in Wausau next. Norman, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Melinda. I have a question for you. I have a number of Meyer lemon plants. A couple of them are brand new to me just this spring I got, but I had one that's a couple years old. And this winter, it lost a lot of leaves. And I'm not sure why, but I tried to acclimate it before I brought it in, but I probably didn't do a good enough job. And then it got scale on it, and I sprayed it with some stuff, and that caused some more leaves to drop. But anyway, it bloomed profusely about 2 months ago and developed a lot of little lemons, but it has hardly no leaves on it, and I don't see any new areas where leaves are going to be forming. In other words, it just seems like it's kind of dormant now with these tiny little green lemons on it. Is there anything I can do for it that will make it shoot some leaves out so it looks like a normal plant instead of a skeleton?
Boy. What do you think?
Yeah, I'll Melinda? Tell you. A couple things to watch for, and I'm glad you caught the scale, and you're right. Sometimes we always want to read the label because hopefully they'll give you a good list of what to use and not to use it on. And stress plants, like you found out, you know, sometimes can be damaged. So you want to continue to watch for insects. I find spider mites can be a big problem on these going in and out as well. I would continue to water as needed, keeping the soil just slightly moist. Good bright sunlight. Is this still in your house now?
No, as we speak, they're out on the deck. I've brought them in at night on any of the cool nights.
Okay,
good. The last 2 weeks, I've tried to put them out when we're having a warm, sunny day. I try to leave them out for at least a couple hours.
Okay, that's good. And you're not seeing any signs of any buds forming or any kind of growth coming about?
No, the only thing, one of them is forming some flower buds again, because you can tell the difference, you know, when they're small, you can see that the flower buds are coming, but they don't want to form any leaf buds, and that puzzles me.
Yeah, I hear you. I'm concerned if you do anything else that you're going to cause the fruit to abort, and you're not going to get leaves anyway, so I would just continue giving it the care you are and being patient and waiting for the plant to trigger back into vegetative growth. Fertilizing at this point might cause the fruit to drop and may not even stimulate leaf growth, too. And you want more leaves, not necessarily longer shoots.
Right. So I wouldn't even mind if the fruit all dropped. As long as I get some growth, I know the plant's okay.
If you really feel the need, a very, very dilute solution of any kind of like a flowering houseplant fertilizer might help as well. But I would do it, and I apologize for that. I would do that in a very, very dilute solution, just very dilute, so that you don't push too much growth at the expense of the plant kind of regaining its strength, and give that a try.
Good luck. Thanks, Norman, for calling. Appreciate it. We have our lime tree is doing very well. It's outside.
I was just going to ask you how yours were doing.
Well, Miss Limey, Limey is what my daughter calls it. So Limey is outside, and Limey stays outside, and Limey has a lot of fruit on it
and
right now.
And you have leaves, though, too, right?
Oh, plenty. It looks healthy as a horse.
Oh, that's excellent. That is excellent. I think I listened to you and Patty Nagai when she was talking about and got me all excited, too, about trying to start doing some more citrus. I haven't done it for a while, so
well, it
I'm glad
smells,
you're doing well.
Yeah, and when it's inside, when it's in the house, we have it in our bedroom, upstairs bedroom, and it smells great.
That's excellent.
So limey's doing well, and I should probably take a picture and post it. I'll do that. That is great. Okay.
I'd love to see limey.
Susan and Madison, your turn. Hi, Susan.
Yes. Oh, I'm so glad to get a chance to ask my question. I have a problem with an invasive tree species. I don't know where it came from. It might be called a tree of life something. But
okay.
It has a tap root. It grows really, really fast. I've cut them down. In 1 year, they go from a tiny size to like 1 or 2 inches. And even when I cut them down, it sends out new shoots. And do you have any idea how I can get rid of it?
It sounds like if it's the plant I'm thinking of, it's called a tree of heaven.
Yeah,
and it's the one that the tree in Brooklyn, and they, if you go along the L in Chicago, you'll see a lot of them growing along there. They grow in vacant places. They produce a lot of seed. They spread all over, as you found out. Removing small trees, you can cut them and treat the stump with Roundup, a 50% Roundup. The Wisconsin DNR, I don't know if this plant is on theirs, but they have a really good invasive plant section on their website, the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources.
Yep.
And they go through all kinds of treatment for buckthorn and crown vetch and all kinds of invasive plants and are always updating it, and they recommend products that are available to homeowners, which I like. But really, what you know, cutting it, but if you don't treat the stump, as you found out, it sends up suckers. And even if you do treat the stump, sometimes it still sends up suckers. So it's a matter of being more persistent than this plant. So you're doing the right things. Just, you know, make sure that your timing and your treatment and you keep after it, and eventually we'll take over. I've been lucky enough to chat with quite a few gardeners in the last couple weeks, and several who have shown me pictures of woodland areas where they've taken out the garlic, mustard, and buckthorn, and after 5 or 6 years, the difference in the woodland is amazing.
It's amazing.
Some of those native wildflowers are coming back, you know, and they were always there, but they were overshadowed by these invasive plants. So if that helps make you keep your energy going and focus as you're cutting and removing, the end result will be definitely worth the effort.
Yeah, we did a show, hosted a show this last week with some folks from the DNR on invasives, and I still have it on my link on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show, so anybody can go there, and we'll repost it so that it's right up front too.
Oh, thanks. That's excellent.
Yeah, they do a wonderful job over there.
Oh, they certainly do.
Melinda Meyer is our guest, by the way, Milwaukee-based gardening expert, the author of more than 20 books. She's the host of Melinda's Garden Moments. You'll hear on radio stations across the country. As a matter of fact, lots of them here in Wisconsin. Great to have her with us on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Next Friday, that's June 21st, we're taking Garden Talk on the road. I wanted to mention that. We'll be broadcasting live from the Midwest Renewable Energy Fair in Custer, Wisconsin, up near Stevens Point. Hope you'll plan to join us 11 to 12:30 on the radio. You can listen in, or better yet, come in person if you can. That's Friday, June 21st at the Midwest Renewable Energy Fair in Custer, Wisconsin. I hope we get a big crowd. We usually do. We get really a nice crowd every time we do this, and I'm looking forward to visiting with the folks at the MREA next Friday. So that's then. Right now, we have Melinda Myers with us. Great to have her along. You can join us at 1-800-642-1234 with your gardening question. Roger in Lone Rock has one. Roger, hi. Thank you for calling.
Melinda, I had a question for the guy who called in and for anybody wanting to prune back shrubs that are getting larger than they want for a space. There's a line Ed Lyons said many years ago, the only plant that doesn't get bigger is a dead plant. And I wonder your thoughts about root pruning. I know it's something that bonsai people use. And what are your thoughts about root pruning? I recommend it for people for transplant, but what about in-place plants? Your thoughts?
You know, I always get nervous because when we start pruning the roots, I know a few people who have tried that on their trumpet vine to try to stimulate flowering have been a little overzealous and done some damage. you know, I think I haven't heard that quote of Ed's. He's a friend of mine, but it's so true. And so root pruning is an option. It's just a lot more difficult. Bonsai, you're in such a controlled environment that you control everything else. And then when you're transplanting, you're right, doing root pruning to prepare it because you're reducing that root size so drastically, a great idea. You know, I put that as a last resort just because, you know, I always feel like if I do it to my plant and it dies, that's one thing. But if I tell you to do it and it dies, that's really not very good.
I understand. My thought was...
Have you tried it, Roger, and have you had success?
I've done it for transplanting. You know, I had a person I was working with wanted to transplant only like 2-foot-high lilac.
Okay.
And I spent about a month root pruning it before we transplanted it. Mm-hmm. And when I transplanted it, the root ball that I moved was so full of fibrous roots, it had no transplant shock for a 2-foot-high lilac, and it bloomed the next year.
Right, and I think that's kind of the whole goal of root pruning, because you're moving it anyway versus trying to leave it in the ground.
Right.
And then I'm not sure you're going to get the same kind of control of height. It, you know, I think if you've got a plant that you know you can't manage anymore, and you're either going to rip it out, it would be a good step to give it a try. And if anyone does, let me know, because I'd love to hear what kind of results you had.
Yeah.
But you're definitely right, Roger. Root pruning before transplanting, a great way to reduce the shock.
For those people with patience. My thought is to have something in place, yes, patience and planning. My thought for people leaving something in place would be to just take a shovel and, you know, go outside the root zone a bit and maybe like every fourth space of the shovel, just shove it in and pull it back out and leave it. That would be how I would recommend it, but I haven't done it specifically either.
Yeah, and the person, I've recommended it for trumpet vine just because it's so, to try to encourage it to bloom, because that's one of the big frustrations of people. And a couple people have had some decent luck trying to stimulate flowering because they are just such luxury feeders, and others have seen some dieback. Now, whether that was just a coincidence or not, the other problem is you're not going to confine the roots, and so they're going to be expanding. So will it really give you much control unless you do this every year? And then,
That was my thought, was that it has to be done every year or two.
Right. And so then you might be saying, maybe I just want to replace it with a plant that's better suited. But I think that's worth a try, Roger. So that's a great suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
If you have that plant you just can't stand to rip out and you're tired of pruning the top, maybe see if the root pruning helps.
Yeah, why not? Yep. Thanks, Roger.
Thank you. And thanks for the Ed Lyons quote. I'm going to have to, I will.
You remember that,
well.
One.
I will.
Oh, man. Mike in Sycamore, Illinois. Hi. Thanks for calling.
Yes, you bet. Thank you for taking my call. I was just wanting to see, my wife and I just started gardening here probably 5-6 years ago, and just enjoy the tomatoes and green beans that we're able to harvest out of that garden. But I'm just wondering what I might be able to do as far as the preparation of the ground in the winter months. I do add, like your grass clippings and leaves and what have you, and till that in. And then also, we've been putting in, I believe it's agamite. Is that it's like a powdered granular, is it like a volcanic type compound? But anyway, we've been tilling that in, and just wondering if I can do anything else to help improve the soil.
You know, I think anytime we use organic materials, so if we use weed killer-free, herbicide-free grass clippings as a mulch, shredded leaves as a mulch, I'm a cultivator. I know some people do the no-till method where they layer and compost on the soil surface and plant as is, the lasagna gardening technique, as some people call it. You know, I was kind of raised digging in the compost and the shredded leaves in the fall. They break down, and I have wonderful soil in my old garden. I'm not real familiar with the agamite. I had someone else ask me the question, and I haven't researched it, so shame on me. You always get caught up. One of the problems with any of the soil additives like vermiculite or perlite, and I don't know this one, but often when we put equipment or shovels or we walk on it, we break them down, and so they lose their porous. And I don't know if this is the same kind of material, but we just have to be careful. The old method of square foot gardening, Mel Bartholomew, had you pull out your topsoil, put a third of it back, a third peat moss, and a third vermiculite or perlite. And so it was like a container in the ground. And you didn't walk on it, you didn't use equipment, and you could just basically move the soil with a trowel or your hand so you didn't break down the vermiculite or perlite. It sounds like you're doing everything that you need to do, and soil takes time to improve. But if you're mulching with organic materials, adding your shredded leaves in the fall because we've got so much of them, that's really going to make a huge difference. And you're going to see, you know, over time, it's just amazing how you could improve your soil. And it sounds like after 5 or 6 years, you're probably in pretty decent shape.
Sure.
Are you having? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Very fortunate, you know, with the amount of tomatoes and green beans and what have you. We've actually started canning here last year and enjoy that to where we're able to, you know, have those tomatoes and green beans then year-round. We're just finishing now the green beans that we can. So as the others are coming in, it's been a nice little handoff of the baton here with the green beans there, so.
Excellent. That's great. It sounds like you're doing everything right and you're having great success. And soil is, and I'm glad you brought this up, Mike, because one of the things is soil, you know, we're continually taking nutrients out as we harvest, so we need to really keep putting organic material and those kind of things, you know, back into the soil to keep it good and healthy. But we can do a lot of that with the resources right in our yard, and it sounds like that's what you and your wife are doing. So kudos to you. That's exciting, and how fun, isn't it, when you could go out and I bet you're dying like I am for that first fresh tomato from the garden.
Yeah. With all the rain we've had, it's just everything is just jumping out of the ground right now. So.
Yep. You can almost watch it grow. Yep. Thank you, Mike.
Thanks a lot, Mike, and have a great harvest this year.
Renee in Viroqua, hello.
Hi there. I have a problem. Well, I transplanted a couple of things, and one of them was a clematis, and last year it took off very well, but now there's a lot of dead growth, and I was wondering how to trim that back. And the other was I divided and transplanted some bleeding hearts, and the root, you know, everything went in well, but then the stalks kind of tipped over and are laying there. Should I trim them back now, or what should I do?
Okay, we'll start with the clematis. One of the things, we prune clematis to kind of control the growth, and also the problem is if any of the stems get bent or broken and they turn brown, once the new growth begins, I find it impossible, at least for me, to get the old stuff out without damaging the new growth. Mm-hmm. So I like to do my pruning in late winter. Most of us are not growing clematis that bloom on new growth, and those are the ones that bloom very early in the season. So if you have one that blooms, that's already bloomed, and I have one in a container, so I'll do my pruning as needed after that. But otherwise, I prune them down about 6 to 12 inches above the ground. Then it's easy to remove anything that's dead, and then the new growth comes up, and it's not a problem. Now, did your stems start out green this year and now turn brown, or was this the old growth from last year that you're talking about on your clematis?
This was
it's
the old
brown.
Growth from last year.
Yeah.
And I can actually still get to it pretty easily.
Okay, well, then you can just cut that right back to the ground. The key is just not damaging the new growth, because what happens is when we have damage to the stems, it creates an opening, and that's one of the ways stem wilt can attack. It won't kill your plant, but stem wilt's a disease. It causes the stems and the leaves to turn black, and it looks ugly, and pruning at ground level and getting rid of those stems is the control. I've seen plants affected for several years in a row, and then the weather conditions change or the damage doesn't occur, and then the plants are fine. But, you know, who wants to look at a black, ugly, half-dead clematis? So, yeah, as long as you can do that, you're fine. And then for your bleeding heart, you might want to try to support it. If it's pretty tall, you could cut it back halfway. In fact, for anybody out there, if you cut your bleeding heart, your common bleeding heart, back halfway after it's done blooming, that stimulates some new leaf growth so that it doesn't turn yellow midsummer, because clematis naturally will die back midsummer. That's normal for the common clematis, not the fern leaf or the fringe clematis. I'm sorry, bleeding heart, for the bleeding
okay.
heart. So, sorry, I'm sorry. So cut that bleeding heart back. You could cut it back halfway. If it's still kind of flopped over and you're worried it's pulling out of the soil with all this rain might be part of the issue, you may want to just prop it up this year and then it should be fine. I had one growing in my backyard that was like 5 or 6 feet tall. The soil, it just was in a great spot for it, and it stood up on its own, but it was established. So, yeah, I think it's just all the moisture being a new transplant and just pruning it. You know, halfway so you still have some leaves, you might see some new growth, so that's an added benefit on that bleeding heart.
Yep, there you go.
Okay.
Thank you.
No, thank you.
Appreciate your call very much. Melinda Myers, our guest today. By the way, she just received the Morrison Communications Award from the American Horticulture Society. I want to talk with her about that at some point, but we will have a chance to do that. She has always been a wonderful guest on our program, Milwaukee-based gardening expert, the author of more than 20 books, and she is also host of Melinda's Garden Moments. And with us on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Gardening can be such a fun and relaxing activity, but frankly, it isn't without its challenges. Last year, we had to deal with extremes of heat and dryness. And this year, of course, we're trying to sneak our planting in between rainstorms and cool temperatures. Larry Mueller here. Welcome to Garden Talk. Choosing the right plants for our average conditions is tricky enough, but when we get these extremes, that's where it takes some real talent. And we have a talented person with us today, Melinda Myers, Milwaukee-based garden expert and the author of 20 books on gardening. She's also host of Melinda's Garden Moments, and we love it when she joins us. Melinda, always a pleasure. Thanks for being with us today.
Oh, my pleasure, Larry. And for people who are looking for some planting ideas, they might want to join me on July 17th or July 23rd at Berner Botanical Gardens, the gardens in Hales Corners, southeast Wisconsin. And we're going to be doing a tour of the gardens and looking at what's doing well, what needs a little help. We may see some things that you recognize, or it's always good to get some planting ideas. They have two flowering dogwoods, and those flowering dogwoods, those are native to like southern Ohio, southern Illinois. These have been in Berner longer than I've lived in Wisconsin, so that's over 35 years, and they were outstanding in bloom. Right now, the fringe trees are the best I've ever seen them. So this crazy weather, some plants are doing great and putting on a good show, and others need a little help from us. So this is a great way to see what's doing well, get some ideas if you need to do some replacement or some new additions to your landscape.
So that's July 17th and July 23rd. Starts at 6:30, right?
You bet. And they can just register. The proceeds go to the Friends of Berner Botanical Gardens Children's Program. So thanks to my sponsors, all of the registration fees are helping support kids' education. So we get gardeners started early. And they can just call the Friends at 414-525-5659 and register. We've done two the same walk. Well, every week's different, but that way we can break up the group so that it's a little more intimate. So we have a lot of fun when we go on these tours, and I usually stay till it gets darker, until everybody leaves, and then I quit talking. So either way.
Okay. And that number again is 414-525-5659. Okay. 414-525-5659.
Great. Thank you.
There we have it. And that will be a lot of fun. Barb Anasio has a question. Hi, Barb.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I hope I can get some help with my flowering bush. I'm not sure how to say it. It's weigela or something like that.
Right,
weigela. It's beautiful red flowers on it. Yeah. So in the past 10 years, I've planted two of these bushes at different times because after 2, 3, 4 years, the thing just dies. Each year it looks worse and worse. This year I was messing around with it. And it's got all sorts of branches sticking out every which way and a few leaves and a couple of buds, flower buds on the bottom branches. So I don't know if it's in the wrong if I'm in the wrong zone for it or the wrong, I don't know what I'm doing.
Where are you located again?
What part of the soil? Osseo.
Osseo. Well, so your soil, how is your soil there in terms of, is it clay? Do you have some decent drainage?
It's sandy loam.
It's sandy loam.
It's nice soil.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay. Full sun or shade?
Actually, I live a little bit north of Eau Claire. I'm in Osseo.
Oh, Eau Claire. Okay. Do you have full sun, part sun, shade?
The first one I planted on the south side of my garage, and the second one I planted, the one I'm working with now, is on the west side of my house.
Okay. And how often are you watering them, or are you watering them?
I let nature water them.
Okay. A couple things. I do find can be tricky, but it's usually those of us with heavier soils that find that we get a lot of dieback. And I had a lot of people telling me last year that it was one of the better plants during the heat and the drought and seemed to survive. What I would recommend doing is, especially the first year or two, it takes a couple years to get trees and shrubs established, is make sure they get sufficient water. It sounds like you have great soil. But plants, when we get them in the ground, need a little extra help. So it may be that you're just, nature's not stepping in when you need it. So a good soaking, check the soil after, say, 3 to 5 days. And sometimes these are grown in soilless mixes. So those root balls dry out fast, but the surrounding soil doesn't. And I'm finding what I need to do sometimes is just water the root ball maybe a couple of times a week the first year or two, the surrounding soil less often. And that seems to, once they root into that surrounding soil, they do much better. And even though you have great soil, it may be that that root ball is drying out. So you may want to check it. And then once you get a feel for, okay, we had rain or we didn't, and this seems like it's drying out more often, once it roots into your wonderful soil, you should have greater success. I'd prune out the dead stems at this point, watch the watering. Obviously, this year not an issue so far, but if it turns hot and dry, just kind of monitor that moisture. You know, you've tried it 3 times. You may want to, you know, give another plant, try something different, and then come back to this after you feel a little bit better of your gardening success.
There we go.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks,
okay,
Barb.
Good luck with it.
Kathy in Richland County, hello to you.
Hello to you, Larry and Melinda. Thanks for taking my call. My issue is with Brussels sprouts. I have been gardening for many, many years, vegetable gardening. And throughout the years, sometimes I would plant them and sometimes not. The last 3 years that I've planted Brussels sprouts, last year was understandable because of the horrendous drought. I got little tiny marbles and really no sprouts. The year before was pretty much a normal gardening year and no sprouts. And the third year back, I got beautiful Brussels sprouts. I don't believe I'm doing anything different. I have not had a soil test, so I don't think that, you know, it's a nitrogen problem because the broccoli and cauliflower neighbors next to my sprouts throw up beautiful heads. I don't, you know, I've pulled off some of the bottom leaves of the sprouts. I don't know if I should be fertilizing at a certain time to encourage little sprouts or what. I've got beautiful dark soil. We're in the valley. I just don't know about these Brussels sprouts. I'm tired of yanking out, you know, 3-foot-tall plants in the fall and throwing them on the burn pile or in the compost. With, you know, without harvesting anything,
right.
Ideas help.
Yeah. When Brussels sprouts, as you know, take a lot longer to reach maturity than broccoli or cauliflower. They're a much longer season plant. So, and if they're nipped by frost, usually the plant doesn't develop. So it sounds like you've got a full-size plant. You're just not getting the sprouts. Is that correct?
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay. And I know a lot of times we see a lot of people will remove the lower leaves, but a lot of times that happens in the harvest process. So it's the more leaves you have, the more energy produced, which means more sprouts, hopefully. Full sun, I'm guessing you're growing these in the same spot every year?
Yeah. In the same area, not exactly in the same row, you know.
Okay, full sun, part sun, shade?
Yes, full sun. Mm-hmm.
Full sun? Yep. Okay. What kind of fertilizing are you doing at this point?
I don't
Okay, I didn't.
Unfortunately, we're breaking up.
Okay, and hopefully that's not my end. So here's what I would suggest, Kathy. You may want to have a soil test, though. You're right. With your broccoli and cauliflower doing okay, your Brussels sprouts should be fine. They are a longer season crop. You may want to do a mid-season fertilization if you're not seeing it. I would use a low-nitrogen, slow-release fertilizer, though. So if we do have hot, dry weather, it doesn't burn. They are a long-season crop, so you may want to check on the tag to make sure that they're getting in early enough so that they're forming the sprouts on the other end. With our cool, wet weather, sometimes it delays it. Last year was an early spring, but then it got cold, so I don't know if you're planting at the same time and if it's just not getting enough time to mature. So I would check your tag on days from planting to harvest to make sure that you're not, you're using the same variety, same number of days, and then giving them some time. Hopefully you'll start seeing those sprouts a little bit earlier. That mid-season nudge just may give them enough, but again, a low nitrogen, slow release so you don't get top growth at the expense of putting those sprouts out. They are vegetative, so it's not like flowers and fruit. So give that a try and see if that gives you some help.
And good luck. Thanks very much for calling. And, oh boy, just looking at my Facebook page here, Marilyn sent us a photo of her rhododendron that finally flowered. And man, did it flower. It's beautiful.
Oh,
it's great to look as a jump on my Facebook page as you listen and take a look at it. We've got Shar in New Berlin next with a question. Hi, Shar.
Hi, nice talking to both of you. I have a native cup plant that's been in the ground for about 6 or 7 years, and now it seems to be just spreading all over in that area. And I had my husband cut down some of it, and I don't know how to get rid of it because it's just taking over.
A friend of mine who does a lot of native landscaping said the way to get rid of canary reed grass is to plant cup. Is to plant cup plant, which will overrun the canary reed grass, but right,
and
that's probably you'd buy into that. Unfortunately, now you have the cup plant to deal with. It's going to be doing the same thing as you. You know, is it mixed in with other plants? Is it part of a prairie? What kind of growing conditions is this in?
It's mixed in with other plants. I had it on the end of this curve in our backyard, and it was just nicely on that curve part, or the end of the curve. And now it just keeps spreading over into the other plants. And I don't know if my husband did cut some back, and I don't know if that'll die or, because it's back, or if it's going to sprout again, and I don't know what to do.
It'll sprout again. You'll probably want to take a good, sounds like you've had that battle too, Larry.
Uh-huh.
Take a good sharp spade and edge the area where you want to keep the cut. Plant, so you're taking care of any of the rhizomes. And then if you do cut it back, you're going to want it when it resprouts. And the one reason I like to do fresh new sprouts is the cup plant gets to be pretty big, and spraying that with a total vegetation killer, if you don't mind using that, or wiping it on, can be rather challenging to not hit the other plant. So you can either paint it on the leaves so it's absorbed and it goes into the roots, but you want to disconnect it from the plants you want to keep. So edging that area, and then because some are from seed, but a lot are from the runners. And
well, it does have runners, huh?
Right, and so you'll want to disconnect it so that you don't poison the parent plant. Otherwise, you got to dig them up to get rid of them because they will resprout. Cup plants are wonderful, and I like all kinds of plants. And Evelyn Howe of the University of Wisconsin, I think, gave great insight for me. This was very good, that we take these ecosystems that are hundreds of acres, prairies, and try to put them onto small lots. And trust me, I've planted many natives on my small city lot, and it takes a little different care to keep those under control than when they have 100 acres. So it's not that we can't do it. It's just we have to manage them differently when we're trying to grow some of those assertive native plants on our smaller lots. So
right.
It's just going to be keeping it under control, and it might be one of those where you go, maybe you find a place where it can run and not crowd out your other plants, or you'll just keep after it now that you know what to watch for.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then I have one other thing. We planted Lamian as a ground cover years and years ago, and it was fine, and then about 2 or 3 years ago, it started. I found it all over my whole yard, And Lamian is another thing it's hard to get rid of because that has runners. And I don't know what to do about that. Just kind of keep pulling it out. And
what is it? Do you know the old version was Lamiastrum, which was variegated yellow archangel that had yellow flowers, and then dead nettle. Now they both are named Lamium. Thank you, Kat.
No, this has purple flowers.
Okay, so this is the dead nettle. I've been able to keep mine under control pretty well. Usually I'll just do the same thing, kind of edge the area where I want to keep it. And if my yard's pretty small, so I can dig that up, and usually that works fine for me. Again, you could do the painting on of a total vegetation killer after you disconnect it from the portion you want to keep. Every once in a while, we have a tough winter, and I find it dies back. It thins out the collection, which is sometimes okay. But they really thrive in dry shade. And so last year, you know, they really took off and did quite well. So, yeah, it's the same kind of idea. Just edge that area where you want to keep it. I find it pulls real easy for me. But if you haven't had luck controlling it that way, again, painting on, wiping on, using a sponge brush, that'll kill the top and the underground portion. So that's why you want to disconnect it from that chunk that you want to keep in your garden.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Okay, well, it's all over yard, but it'll take a paintbrush.
Well, maybe you want to get rid of all of it, which will make it a lot easier.
Yeah, absolutely.
Painting it on those. And, you know, painting it on the leaves just makes it a lot easier, so then you don't hurt your good plants. And then if some survives, maybe that's a good starting point for keeping it under control in the future.
There you go, Char. Thank you. Judy in Madison. Hi.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I need a plant doctor.
Uh-oh.
About a week and a half ago, I splurged and bought an endless summer blue hydrangea.
Okay.
And planted it, and I think I've poisoned it. It was doing okay, and I put about scattered a cup of the aluminum sulfate around.
Ooh,
and now about a third of the plant, the leaves are turning brown. They're getting crumbly. One of the flowers, half of it, is turned brown. What do I do?
Well, fortunately, we've had a lot of rain. So it's basically, you're right, it's too much aluminum sulfate. And so aluminum can be toxic and a sulfur as well. So really, it's usually just a couple of tablespoons that we usually put at each time when we add that to try to keep the flowers blue in our alkaline soils. The only thing you can do is really just making sure that you're watering sufficiently to wash the excess through the soil. And again, we've had some good rain, so monitor the water. Good soaking, wash that excess through, and that will help. Endless summer, I find, too, they are potted in usually soilless mixes, like so many of our shrubs, and they're very sensitive to dry conditions. And when I was putting mine in the garden, it took a couple of years for me keeping that root ball moist, and I have a little bit heavier soil, so I didn't need to water the surrounding soil as often. Once it rooted in beyond the planting hole, it was fine, but I really had to keep after it. And I would occasionally see some browning on the leaves just from drought stress. So monitor the moisture level by that root ball, that original root size, and then the soil around it. But you want to make sure that it's moist, so that'll help wash some of that excess through and help hopefully dissolve it so you'll have less burning.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Judy.
And good luck. And I just want to give a tip, Larry. One of the things a lot of us that have grown endless summer, and this is not just in Wisconsin but across the country, a lot of northern gardeners have been a little disappointed.
Yes.
Okay. Bloom on new and old growth. And not always performing as well as we thought. Well, one of the things that I found has worked very well is making sure it receives plenty of moisture. This year, good example. And then one of the things is the Milorganite fertilizer is low nitrogen, slow release, so it doesn't promote leaf growth at the expense of flowers. But it also has a little bit of non-leaching phosphorus. But research showed when the microorganisms work on releasing those nutrients, it releases some of the phosphorus and potassium bound in our soil, making it available to the plant. That encourages the bloom, that phosphorus. And I've had many, many gardeners over the last 5 or 6 years come back and tell me they've really been able to turn their endless summer back into a good blooming shrub by doing that. Good moisture, proper fertilization, especially something that makes that phosphorus bound in the soil available to the plant. So something to keep in mind, the aluminum sulfate gives you the color differences because they're blue in acid soil and pink in alkaline soil.
Well, that's really good to know. I don't think there's a plant that I've had more complaints about on Garden Talk over the years than Endless Summer. I mean, it's...
I know, and I think, you know, we northern gardeners, you know, go to Tennessee and see those beautiful blue and pink hydrangeas, and we want them here. And you know, you might be better with Pinky Winky or Vanilla Strawberry, and even though those are PG-type, panicle-dried hydrangeas, they're hardy, they're reliable, and the pink isn't as intense, but, you know, you'll get it. Or try Invincible Spirit, which is pink, an Annabelle type of hydrangea that's pink no matter what you do to the soil, but it blooms on new growth, big flowers that will probably need a little support on those stems, but that'll get you that pink without all the hassle, too.
Deborah in Berlin, thank you very much for calling. Hi.
Hi, thank you so much. I have a painted daisy and perennial geranium that grow great, especially the painted geranium blossoming, but they get so tall and they flop over and they're not pretty at all. Can you give me some advice as what I could plant around them to help support them, or is that just the nature of them and I have to live with it?
Well, you can...
I'll hang up.
Go ahead.
I was going to say I'll hang up and listen unless you have a...
Okay.
Oh, okay, great. One of the things you might want to do with your painted daisy, I'm guessing you have it in full sun because they do the best there, you might want to go with something like a blue fescue, a nice grass. I think that would be a nice combination, low growing, a little stiff. You know, and that's a great idea if you don't get around to staking, and I'm low maintenance, so I don't like to do staking because it never gets done on time. And putting a little bit shorter neighbors nearby is one good way to give that some support. So maybe look for some things that are a little more stiffer and upright. I think the blue fescue would be a nice combination with that. You can prune them earlier in the season. It will delay bloom, or once they're done flowering, but then you know, get some new growth and it'll look a little neater and cleaner. Perennial geraniums, usually what happens is pruning those back after blooming, and often I'm seeing a little bit of leaf spot with this wet spring, but very common on perennial geraniums. So after they flower, pruning them back, getting rid of the old leaves, letting that new growth come through will help keep it a little more compact but looking nice. But that's after flowering. Now, Roseanne geranium tends to be a little more billowy and it repeat blooms throughout the season, which is one of the positives. So you might want to just use that as a spiller on the edge of your garden, kind of spilling over onto a patio deck or walk or in an area where it has some room to kind of layer upon itself and really take advantage of the growth habit. So a great book that you might want to check out is The Well-Tended Perennial Garden by Tracy DeSabato-Oust. Not for new gardeners because you'll think you have to do too much work, but once you want to fine-tune, just like Deborah, it's a great resource, The Well-Tended Perennial Garden.
And Melinda, thank you so much for being with us today. Really appreciate it.
Always a pleasure, Larry, and thank you, and everybody, good luck with your gardens out there.
Melinda Myers, Milwaukee-based gardening expert. She'll be back again, and we have a link to her site on my Facebook page at The Larry Mealer Show. Thank you for listening. Please stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.